morning.
Yep. That's all I got right now.
That's all you got. So for a little background for the listeners, we typically record once a week. And we took a week off last week just because we had a little bit of a backlog, which is why you sometimes hear us talk about things in the past tense. So it's been 2 weeks since we've talked plenty since then, but it's been 2 weeks since we've recorded. Well, I don't think we've even spoken for like a week, which is odd for us, other than the occasional text. So how you doing?
I'm all right. I'm okay. Autumn is here in North America, certainly in Wisconsin. So it's early October as we record this, and it was South Central Wisconsin was 37 degrees this morning.
Ooh, yeah, I think it was 45 here in Central Connecticut. We had a camp out, our first camp out with the Scouts in, you know, since January. We had it last weekend. And it was 60 overnight. It was gorgeous. But we're going out again next weekend, and it's looking like 45. That's a big 15-degree difference right there, 60 to 45.
Yeah, it makes camping a whole lot more interesting.
Well, all the more use for fire.
Oh, nice.
Yay, fire.
Yeah.
So speaking of October, you know, it's October, Halloween's coming. Have you noticed the increase in horror films on all the streaming services?
Of course.
Well, there's one in particular I need to bring to everyone's attention that I just noticed this morning was added, I think maybe yesterday, to Netflix.
Oh, yeah?
And it's relevant to us.
Okay.
Okay, you ready for this?
I am.
Oktoberfest, Beer and Blood.
Ah, yes. I read about that.
Did you?
The story of the creation of Oktoberfest and in Munich and all of the shady underdealings that took place to make it happen.
It is a six episode miniseries that looks like a can't miss. Absolutely, Beer and Blood. Oh my!
Two things I don't want mixed together.
Just, no, never.
So any brewers out there, no blood and beer, that, no, don't even, no.
But don't you think if they threw in a little lactose, it would make it all okay?
Oh, well, now you've got a hit on your hands right there. That's a smash hit now.
Yep. Oh, man, yuck.
I don't know where to go from there.
No, I don't. I don't either. Anyway, also, since this is dropping mid to late October, did you miss the Sandy Ridge Farms hot plant sale? Shame on you. Shame on you. You missed the sale. However, you can always get discounts from our friends at Sandy Ridge if you tell them you're with Hopnology. 5% off anything at Sandy Ridge Farms. Hopnology, just tell them Hopnology, type it into the code on the website, show them your Hopnology tattoo, whatever it takes. Did I lose you?
Nope. I just didn't have anything else to say. you summed it up so well. What am I going to say?
Okay, well, good. I'm glad we're hitting the ground running, because now we're going to talk about the farm, and I'm just going to let you talk while I go, you know, make myself a mimosa or something.
Blah.
No, I'm more of a Bloody Mary person myself.
Yeah, right at this time, yeah. Yeah, because we haven't talked about the farm much in the last few episodes, so we got to start actually talking about stuff that matters instead of all this marketing crap.
Oh, please. Please. If it doesn't end up in the glass in front of someone, did any of it really happen?
Yeah.
If you brewed a beer and no one drank it. If you grew a hop and no one brewed with it.
Oh, really? Hop growers know all about that already.
Well, that's true.
Come on. Jeez. Finicky brewers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we've been getting a lot of questions, as we normally do.
So I wanted to focus on a lot of chit-chat that is occurring in the Southern Hemisphere right now, because obviously they're dealing with emergence. And I think, as I said a couple of episodes ago, I think they all run together. I don't know. I piece little snippets together from various episodes and make new ones in my head. And I'm like, hey, yeah, we talked about that in that one episode that one time. No, James, that was six episodes.
And sometimes it's just a fever dream you had, let's be honest.
It is mostly fever dreams, yes. but it's that time of year with emergence, and people are still puzzled about timing, cutback timing, training timing, all these sorts of things. And people, it's not that difficult. Okay, and we're going to go through it again today. And hopefully, iteratively, we can help people really come to the realization that there is no easy button in hop production. if you're 2 or 3 or 4 years into this and you think that you're going to have everything you need to know to optimize your hop yard, you are going to be a sad little puppy because you've got a lot of tuition to pay yet. So, you know, one of the comments was, you know, it's like, how do we do this without it taking a generation? You don't. This is a generational operation, and there's no way around that. But we can use science to help reduce, you know, the time there. You don't have to wait until you're a grandfather to be able to pass on, your grandmother to pass on your information to the youngins about how to be successful. So let's just break this down, shall we? In as succinctly as I possibly can.
Yeah, because that's your thing.
Number one, and this goes for pretty much everything in your hop yard, but specifically when you're talking about timing of things. Number one, what do your notes say?
Notes? What notes?
Therein lies the problem. You get one chance at this a year for most of us who aren't, you know, growing in greenhouses and whatnot, but that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. You get one shot a year. That's all the more data that you're going to get to inform what you need to change next year. Don't you think it's kind of imperative that you take copious notes and observations through that year? I would think so.
You would. You would hope people are paying attention. And you know, we had Dan Carey on, I think it'll be the week before this one in terms of publication, maybe 2 weeks before. And he said something that just stuck with me. And I think you know what I'm going to say. He talked about the fact that, yeah, you can brew, you can try things, you can experiment this and that. But if you're a hop grower, you get maybe 30 harvests in a lifetime.
Yep.
And he said that, and I don't know about you, it hit me in a way that thought hadn't hit me before from a data perspective, because you do have oh so few opportunities to learn and to get it right and to tweak. It's a little sobering.
It is. And if you were coming at this highly technical crop with no background in the science and technology of that particular system, the only way you would have to learn is through personal experience. So you'd be going in blind and you'd be trying, you know, X, Y, and Z things, and you only get, like you said, 30 chances at it. That's it. 30 times to perfect something. You know, how many times, you know, when Edison was asked about creating a light bulb, you know, and his failures, he said, I didn't fail 1,000 times. I just found 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb.
There you go. We succeed or we learn.
Right. So when it comes to growing hops and you know you've got a very, very narrow set of data points that you're going to collect over your career, assuming you're in it that long, right? And I think most people bail before they get that far because of the heavy lift of profitability that's involved. But
of course, and of course, you know us well enough to know we're not saying, you know, what do you mean you're quitting after only 2 or 3 seasons? I mean, sometimes you figure out this is not for you, but it takes a lot of trial and error. And I even hate to say error. It's learning. It's always learning. There, and we talked about this very recently on the, I forget what we called it, the uh-oh, now what?
Yeah. Sideways? Yeah.
Sideways, yes. Sideways. Thank you, sideways. In retrospect, oh, now what would have been good too.
I would have said, shit, but you know.
Well, yeah, there's that. That's okay. We're in the explicit category. You can do that. Mm-hmm. We talked about it then, the fact that, you know, there are very few things that are a complete and utter, well, this is unfixable.
Just burn it. Mm-hmm. Just burn it. Wow, start over. Yep.
Fire's gonna be a theme today.
Yeah. Fire. There's lots of fire. Shitload of fire. So
what do your notes say? Was number one.
Right. What do your notes say? They're like, well, I don't know what notes to take. Ah, we're gonna talk about that. I think maybe that's gonna be my new first go-to question for anybody who's asking me questions about, you know, how do I optimize this, or what should I do here? How do you know this is what happened? What do your notes say? I don't know. Well, let's talk about what notes to take, because you know, I understand it's easy to say, well, just keep a journal. Journal of what? Right? How I feel today, how I, you know, what the sky looks like. Well, maybe it's what the sky looks like.
drawings of rainbows. Make sure you have good colored pencils.
Good colored pencils. So let's look at these notes. So when it comes specific to timing of your crop in the early season, there's some things, you know, mostly we're looking at burn back or cut back of the early shoots. And if you need to do that, it's not an absolute. It's if you need to do that, and your notes will inform that. Training timing, and your notes will inform that too. So those are the two. Those are the two points I want to look at here. The first thing I want people to be looking at is taking copious amounts of weather data. And so I'm not talking about soil temperature and all that kind of stuff. Those are physical field measurements. I'm talking about weather, not climate. Right? Climate's what happens on a large scale. I'm talking about weather local to you, to your yard, not the weather station that is at the university 45 miles away, because it's almost pointless. Because the things that are going to affect your early season growth are going to happen on your yard. So if you don't have a weather station, get one.
And there are many of them.
So many, and we could talk in another episode about what to look for in weather stations. But get a weather station. Here's the data that you need to collect. Just throughout the year, you need to collect daily minimum and maximum temperatures. Now, if you're really savvy and want a lot of data, you'll record that, you know, at least once an hour, if not every half an hour, throughout the whole day, and do some cool trending and charting of it. But you need the minimum and maximum, and ideally over time, every day. You need precipitation. How much water, rain, or even snow did you get? Because the data that you're taking doesn't just consist of the growing season. So if you're in a cold climate, temperate zone cold climate, and snow is part of your precip, you need to measure that. Certainly if, and precip as in rain, if you're in a warmer climate where your plants don't necessarily go completely dormant, you need to keep track of that. So precip, daily min-max temperatures, precip, relative humidity. We need to know that. That will certainly come into play much later when we're dealing with mildew and disease. That's the absolute minimum that you need right there. Now, if you want to be super sexy about it, the other information that you're going to grab, incident solar radiation. What does that mean? Sunlight. Some weather stations you can get a plug-in called a pyranometer, which measures sunlight. Very important, certainly, for understanding how much energy is reaching that plant from the sun.
And you've talked ad nauseum about day length and how important that is.
Yep. And so this is going to tell you not only what the day length is doing, but it's also going to tell you how much energy is reaching the plant. That becomes extremely critical later for yield and alpha acid development. But certainly in the early part of the season, that's going to tell us something like how many sun versus cloud days did I have? Because that makes a difference in plant vigor big time.
And it doesn't it also impact, we were just talking recently about alpha acids.
Absolutely it does. There's a gobs of data out there that look at the number of sun versus cloud days and what happens to alpha. Not something you can really control.
But you can observe it and understand it.
Exactly, because when you start looking at your performance for the year, you need to equate your performance to the variables that you can and can't control. Just because you're like, well, I can't do anything about it, so why measure it? Well, it tells you something about what happened and maybe why something happened. So measure it. So pyranometer, soil moisture probe, and soil temperature probe. So again, now we're moving from weather to site conditions. Those will tell us a couple of things, and this is really important for emergence. Well, certainly it'll tell you what temperature the soil is for physiological activity. And usually that threshold, sorry folks, in Fahrenheit, is somewhere around 50 degrees. I say somewhere around because it's not well understood, and it's likely that there's varietal effects. But in general, when hops start waking up out of a dormancy period, they're looking for temperature and photoperiod. And if that soil temperature is not above, you know, 50 degrees or so, you're going to get very sluggish emergence if you get any at all. They'll tell you about soil temperature. Soil moisture, obviously for irrigation later on down the line, is pretty important.
I would think so.
Yeah, but soil moisture will tell you something about stress levels. And then also for the early season, as these plants are waking up, the fastest way the soil warms up is not through sunshine, it's through rain. If the soil's cold, rain is usually, you know, when you start finally getting into springtime and the rain is warming up, it's not, you know, this god-awful, you know, chilly November rain in North America or May rain in the Southern Hemisphere. It's going to warm the soil up quickly that way. So having that in combination, you should be able to see trends in your soil moisture and soil temperature in the early part of the season. So you could say, well, my soil's really damp, you know, it's got a high amount of water there, but the temperature's not rising. Well, it means the rain's too cold. So you can't count during that time frame, whatever you're measuring, you can't count on the rain of warming up your soil that much. So it's likely going to keep those plants in a more dormant type or slow growth phase. As soon as that soil moisture temperature starts to come up, you can expect that your plants are going to wake up. So people are like, man, I don't know why my plants are going to wake up. Bullshit. Do you have the data? You can start to trend it and say, oh yeah, wow, it's still pretty cold. And then you start looking at your data, you're like, wow, the rain is, you know, the groundwater is getting a lot warmer. I'm seeing an uptick here, you know, now it's like 55 or 58 degrees. Well, then hold on to your hat, Johnny, because they're going to start popping. It's that simple. The data will tell you, it's not tell you, but it'll give you hints, right? It'll preclude certain actions.
And I think you just said it again, it'll preclude certain actions, and you said it before, but if I can't control this, the daylight hours, why does it matter? And I just want to make sure that hits home, is you're learning things so you understand what happened, so you don't inadvertently make changes you do have control over to correct for a problem that doesn't exist. Did that make sense?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, understanding it all is just so key to making sure that you don't overcorrect.
My favorite is saying, I've tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas. Mm-hmm. You are in control of your own destiny here for the most part as a hop grower. And for those of us who shrug our shoulders saying, well, I don't know how to figure this out. After we go through these steps here and you still say that, I can't help you.
Yeah. Except for the only thing you can't really control. I mean, tornadoes. If it's tornadoes, just go hide if it's a tornado.
That's what you have insurance for, which is an upcoming episode later. So, okay. So we talked about taking that weather data. That's all going to inform us retrospectively, taking observations of which is my next point, physical observations of the plant and relating it back to correlating it back to environmental conditions or our weather and site conditions. Okay. So we've done that. We're taking data. Mm-hmm. And again, just as a note, it doesn't stop after you've trained. You're taking data all year long. Next thing, observations. When was emergence? I ask this question all the time. When was emergence? Oh, emergence was about the second week of May. Or in Southern Hemisphere, emergence was, you know, let's say late October. Was that all your varieties? Was that 100% emergence? Was it the first time you saw red buds breaking to green? What was that? What did emergence mean to you? So I think as you're out there taking data, you need to understand by variety what these plants are doing, because they all exhibit different growth habits. We call it phenologies. What are they doing at any given point in time? Don't try to relate that to weather or site conditions yet. Just take the data. So you're out there looking around, and the things that I would do, I'd be looking at zero emergence. Like everything is still what I call tight red bud. You've got no emergence whatsoever, or you've got some emergence and the buds are still really tight red. They're not really doing anything. And then you've got about 25% of your observations. You've got some sort of emergence on. Even if they're red, they're broken through the ground. Then you've got, you know, 50%, then you've got 75%, and then you've got 90 something, because, you know, rarely, at least in my case, I never got 100%, because I was always had one crown dying somewhere or another, right?
Sure.
But it's not like I'm counting every plant. You know, when you've got 50 or 60 acres, you're not counting every plant. So you're taking a subset and you're doing it the same thing for each variety.
Yep. And I would add to that, if you have 50 or 60 acres, if you've got 20 acres of Cascade, I don't know why you would, but if you've got 20 acres of Cascade, you're not taking a set of readings for that 20-acre plot. You're going to chunk it out.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've got different over that growing area, at least I did. I had probably had four different soil types, and I would know that my Cascades growing up on the rocky soil nub there is going to have a different emergence characteristic than the ones that are growing in the lowlands. That leads me to the next point, which is as you're taking these data, you have to take the data and plot them out based on the site. So now you're saying, okay, I've got this zone here, you know, on the lower left, that is lowland, deep, rich soil. And then I've got another site over here. And let's say those lowlands are Cascade. And then I've got another site up over here that's, like I said, rocky, more of a hilly nub sort of thing, and the soil's not as good. But those up there are Centennial. Understanding where they're plotted and what their habit is across your site is going to help you understand what the overall population is going to be doing from an emergence standpoint throughout the season or every year. It's super helpful if you want to know what your site conditions do for emergence is to have the same variety in all those places, right? So you don't have to deal with varietal differences. But if you've got, you know, two varieties that are vastly different from one another, let's say you've got a noble type on one soil type and you've got a really vigorous North American type on another, it's kind of hard to draw too many conclusions about the impact of where those varieties are located just because their characteristics are so different. So don't get too wrapped up in trying to figure, well, yeah, those are never going to yield very well because they're up there on that hill. Well, is it a varietal thing or not? That's a whole nother story. Don't get wrapped up in that. Right now, we're just looking for, based on where you've planted them, you can worry about whether you should move them or do something different later, but based on where you planted them, chart their emergence, you know, in that growth phase where they're emerged, you know, 0 to 10%, 25, 50, 75, and, you know, completely emerged. And it's going to be all over the board. But it will, as you graph these things and chart these things later in the off season, quote unquote, then you'll be able to start maybe seeing some trends. And you do this, think about this, you do this for 3 years. Now you've got starting to get a pretty nice data set going. And you start to understand how these plants are behaving at your site. But if you don't do that and you're just sort of like, you know, yep, it looks like it's springtime. They're coming up. You just walk around and then pretty soon you're like, yeah, I should probably train. You've lost an enormous amount of information.
Oh, yeah.
Would inform you what to do. And that you still sit there and you shrug your shoulders and you throw your hands up in the air and say, I don't know, you know, this is black magic. It isn't.
And this may sound a little daunting, collecting all this information, but as we said, I mean, weather stations are readily available. And think about it. For those of you who are homebrewers, and I suspect there are more than a few of you, tell me that you don't take copious notes. I've never seen a more obsessive group than the homebrew population. when you're putting something together and, oh, if I try adding this here versus here and letting the gravity get to this instead of this, I mean, you guys are about as obsessive compulsive as it is, as it goes, in terms of keeping track of what you're doing and tweaking the recipe and changing it later. This is no different. It's on a larger scale, but it requires that same obsessive nature and diligence in order to make sure you can look back and say, well, what did I do last time and what did I like and not like about it and how do I have to change it going forward? You can't change it going forward if you don't know what you did.
Right. And we haven't talked about change up from your data because you have to be really careful about that because there's so many variables that you're dealing with. If you're trying to understand what the impact is of a given set of variables, you can't change everything every year. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to extrapolate the impact of those variable changes year over year. So don't be like, hey, I got all this data and I don't like this, so I'm going to do this different next year. Well, what is that going to tell you if you've only got 1 year's worth of data from changing something? So be very careful about that. I don't want to get too much into that. We can talk about that at another time. But for now, you're taking data on when they've emerged. You've got your weather station. You're taking that data and you're just taking data and keeping the logbook. So now you've got your emergence information. Another data point that you're going to take is how quickly these things are growing, these shoots are growing after they emerge. And usually what I'm looking at is what percentage of the crowns, you know, when, I should say, as I'm walking through, because you're going to be walking through and there's going to be different stages of emergence, right? They're not all going to be at the same stage. So you're going to walk through and say, okay, yep, 75% are emerged. Okay, of those 75%, how many of them have shoots that are longer than 6 inches on that given date? Because you're going to have an idea when they emerged. Then you're going to also start charting their growth rate when you're going through and doing that. It's a lot of data.
Yep.
You know, James, does every professional grower do this? No, because again, they've got generational knowledge. So they know this stuff already. They know what to do when and what's going to happen when any given environmental condition occurs. But you don't. But
right. And at some point in the history of their generational knowledge in the farm, yes, they did this.
Yeah.
They got to be that good and that consistent from doing it over and over again to the point where, okay, I know what that is. I know what it's going to be.
Yep. Otherwise, it will take you 30 seasons to understand a couple of variables. And even then, people wonder, like, even we did when we first started this, we're like, I can't believe there isn't more information on, you know, on hop production. Well, there's a reason for that, because there's so many variables that impact your production. If you're not taking charge of your own information destiny on your hop yard, you are screwed.
Your information destiny.
Like,
wow.
That? Yeah.
I like that.
So that's what happens. You're done. So take control and start measuring shit.
I want to throw one note in here about measurement in general. And, you know, we've talked so many times about having the right kind of help on your hop yard, and you can't do it all yourself, but it is your baby and you're the owner. And, you know, how do you balance that? Just like with anything else, make sure you're not the only person who's doing this, but make sure that the other folks who might be covering for you, or, you know, you measure that's half of the yard while I do this half. Guess what? You're going to have different ways of observing things. You need to make sure the folks that are taking visual measurements are doing it the same way that you are. So just take some care, because you can have a very instant data bias that has more to do with the data acquirer than the actual situation in the field.
Undeniable about that. Some of the best money we ever spent at our large hop yard was hiring a woman, Jackie, who had been an IPN scout in the 70s. She was, you know, an older woman now. She wanted to be involved because she lived really, literally, she lived next door to the yard, and she just kept watching what was going on. And one day she came over and she's like, this is so exciting. What can I do? I'm like, well, she wasn't able to harvest. She wasn't able to do all the really physical stuff. And up to that point, I had been doing all of the field observations. And she started telling me what she used to do. I'm like, well, you're an IPM scout. You can do this. And you live right across the hop, the road from the hop yard. So she was in there making data measurements all the time, because that's what she loved to do. And we were lucky and fortunate in that scenario to have her offer up her services. I got binders full of data. You know, that was another thing. I'm like, Jackie, here's a smartphone. You can drop flags and take data and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I like paper. Yeah, I know, but now it has to go into the computer. And I need somebody else to do that, because you're like, I don't do computers. So that's a whole nother thing. But the way measurements are taken are really important too. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get back to what data we're taking. So what percentage of those plants have at least a shoot that have reached 6 inches? So we want to get those percentages and understand how quickly these things are growing. Because again, we're going to relate that back to the weather and site data that you took from your weather station later in the year. We're starting to build a map, right? We're starting to understand what these plants do under certain environmental conditions. There's people listening right now, Greg, saying, James, you said you're going to tell us when to cut back. And when I'm like, I'm not going to tell you. Your data are going to tell you. I'm telling you how to take data so that it can tell you what you need to know.
And notice the when piece of this that's how all this started, was the idea of timing. So much of this is about measuring the when. Yes, there's an aspect when it's all done of what affected your quality, and that's very important as well. But the the questions that keep on coming up. When do I do this? When do I do that? Well, first of all, if you're asking, you probably missed the window.
Yeah, that's true. More than likely. Very true. You probably did miss the window.
But this is to build your – this helps to not only build the what worked and what didn't, but what does your schedule look like? Mm-hmm. What can you be in – what going forward will you be able to anticipate so that you can plan your timing? Six-inch shoots, sorry.
We're at that six-inch phase right now, and one – you know, more than half of your plants have shoots that are longer – or 6 inches or longer. They're starting to get into this – the early bend of the hockey stick where vegetative growth is going to take off. And again, you can match that to weather data later, but you will see a trend of what we call growing degree days. There's a reason why we use growing degree days to measure vegetative growth. So what number of quote heat units have a plant accumulated? So you can look that up. I'm not going to talk about that now, but growing degree days. Once they reach that, you know, 75% 6-inch stage, they're like off to the races. They're going to want to go. Now you have to start concerning yourself with, are these things, since they're starting their vigorous vegetative growth, are they at the right stage, at the right growth stage, where if I train them, their vegetative vigorous growth is going to sync up well with my flowering criteria? Right, which is shortening days after the solstice, a certain number of nodes, right, usually 22 to 28 or 30 nodes on the string from the crown up to the top. At that 75% 6-inch stage, if I let them go and I did nothing and I trained them, how quickly are they going to reach the top? If they're going to reach and top out 2 weeks before that optimum flowering timing, cut them back. Come back, because you're stacking up all of those conditions in order to hit that optimum window, you're going to blow it. So you have to slow those plants down somehow. How do we do that? We cut them back, or we burn them back. We literally get rid of those shoots that are coming up. You're like, oh my God, that's my new growth. I'm so excited. What happens if I kill a plant? You're not going to kill a plant, right? Now, I wouldn't necessarily do this on second year plants. Certainly if you planted late in the first year. But for mature plants, yes, get rid of them. Get rid of that growth, because it will send up secondary buds from the soil faster than the first ones came up, as long as your, again, weather conditions hold out and you don't get a, you know, freak cold snap. But those next shoots that come up will be more likely to be timed correctly for training and hitting your topping out phase, as we call it, and coordinating with the solstice and having the right number of nodes for sidearm production. That's what you're going for. So if you don't understand early in the season how your site and weather conditions impact that early phase of growth, you're totally, you know, shooting in the dark, which is where I think all these questions come from. I don't know when to burn back. Well, first of all, do you need to? Because some varieties may not tolerate it in terms of timing. For me, I couldn't burn back Saz or Tet or Centennial because there was just not enough time left in the year because they were so slow growing for me on my site. Other people were like, oh no, God, I got to cut my Centennial back all the time. Those are your site conditions. In South Central Wisconsin, across the road from the marsh where we were at, that was my site condition, so I couldn't do that. That's what you have to learn for yourself.
And, you know, we've said it so many times before that you, for so many things, you can't ask your neighbor. Well, you can ask your neighbor, and of course, there's good information out there, but those individual things, you've got to learn, and God's sake, if you don't write it down, if you don't pull out that little notebook with your colored pencils and write it down, next season, you're going to have the same question all over again.
Do we need to make a template for people? I mean, it's not that hard, but...
well, a template, or, you know, all you got to do is hop on TeePublic, search for Hopnology. You can get a Hopnology branded notebook for the cheap.
Oh, there you go. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. It's blank on the inside. We didn't put any data in there.
No, it's blank on the inside. But every time you see it sitting on your desk, it'll be that reminder that the Hopnology guys are saying, go take some data. Don't leave me here. Don't leave me here on the desk.
Yep.
Go out there and do something else. You got to go take the data. Go take the data.
James, it's another thing to do. You mean I got to go out there and do it? You know how long it's going to take? Yep, I know exactly how long that's going to take because I did it for a decade.
Yep, and if you don't do it, you'll waste a whole lot of time in the future years.
You'll be scratching your head, and your business partner who's getting ready to dump you because they're not seeing any progress, and they're looking at you as the technical person saying, "What are we going to do to get our yield up?" And you're like, "I don't know. I'm gonna ask Facebook." Okay, yeah, that's going to work out well for you.
Your business partner is also going to be mad that you spent money on this Hopnology notebook that's sitting there empty, you know, on your desk. So
there's a... Except for the doodles that are in it.
Yes, right? Yes.
The doodles of you drinking beer with your buddies.
And you've got the Hopnology notebook that's empty. You've got the Hopnology pillow that you use to lean on when you're taking a nap instead of going out in the field.
Well, maybe we should take the pillow off and not entice them.
I don't know. It's pretty enticing, that pillow. Hop production's all about taking midday naps, right?
Oh, of course. You got to have your siesta. Okay, back to it here. We are wrapping this up for this topic, but the idea here is that if you haven't started taking data yet, and this you're like, okay, James, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out there. I will, damn it, Greg, get that Hopnology notebook, and I'm going to start taking data. The data you're taking right now isn't necessarily going to influence what you do this season, and that's something really important. You're building up your library of data to help inform what happens, to know whether you should cut back or not. If you notice a trend over 5 or 6 years that your springs are colder and damper than you thought they, you know, were, well, when I was a kid, I was remember when X, Y, and Z, and you're using those memories to inform how you manage, your data are going to tell you otherwise. They're going to say, you're cold, you're wet, it's going to retard growth, and you can't afford to cut back on your less vigorous varieties. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, I don't know what to do and I'm afraid to do anything, so I'm not going to do anything, your timing is going to get blown on your more vigorous varieties, and you're bragging about picking cones in early July, and there are other people looking at you saying, well, I guess you didn't watch your timing. Take control and start measuring shit.